Blog Talk Radio.
Review behind the scenes, guys. This is the weekend edition, and my name is Michelle Cornwell Jordan. I am one of your hosts. Now, my co-host Jamie White, she is not with us this evening, and we're just hoping that she's having a wonderful time. She has an author event. Jamie, we wish you all the best, and we look forward to you coming back next weekend. Everyone, I'm very excited because I'm having an opportunity to chat with science fiction fantasy writer, author Niecy Shaw. She's joining me, and we're going to chat regarding her upcoming release, Everfair. And I'm very excited to chat with Ms. Shaw. I'm very excited about the book. Welcome to the show, Niecy. I'm so happy that you're joining me.
I'm so glad to be here.
Well, I'm looking forward to chatting with you, and I have so many questions. But before we do that, just have a brief message, and then we'll jump right into it. How does that sound?
That sounds good.
Okay. Hi, this is Cecile Monique, and you're listening to Indie Review Behind the Scenes, your source for the hottest in indietainment's news and features.
And for those that are just joining us again, I'm having the opportunity tonight to chat with a science fiction fantasy author, Niecy Shaw. Niecy, thank you for joining me. As we said previously, if you can just tell a little bit about yourself for the listeners, that would be awesome.
Okay, well, let's see. I'm an African-American woman. I live in Seattle, Washington. I'm from the Midwest, originally from Kalamazoo, Michigan. Then I lived for 25 years in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I love it here.
Yes, and as we were chatting earlier, I'm a huge, even though, you know, the series has been a little while, huge Twilight fan, so I'm all for, and before that, I love many of the movies that were set in that area, so I've always wanted to come up there, so I'm very envious. I'm over here in Texas, where it's always hot, so, but, well, let's... Let's just begin. Niecy, how did you find the writing path? Was this always a lifelong dream of yours, or was it a newfound passion?
Well, I had it all of my life. When I was very young, before I was much older than five or so, I told people, when they asked me what I wanted to be, I'd say I wanted to be a magician. And actually being a writer is pretty close to being a real live magician. I can convince people that they're, you know, on the surface of Mars, or, you know, 3,000 years of past, or 300 years in the future, as long as I'm writing well.
Yes, very, very nice. So what was the catalyst that brought you from the dream, from that little girl's dream, into actually sitting down and making this your career? What was that catalyst? What happened?
Well, there was, I mean, I read constantly, and I enjoyed writing, but I think the thing that gave me the idea that I could write for a living was when I started reading science fiction by feminist writers back in the 1970s. There was a book in particular by Susie Bethune Charnas called Walk to the End of the World. And it was very challenging to patriarchal values, let us say. I read this thing and I thought, wow, you can write this kind of stuff. Don't get they'll away with it, and you get money. So I more or less decided then I had to do that.
I like that. You like it? They get paid for it. How cool. Daydreams. And
yeah,
I didn't know you daydreams
know
and getting
how,
paid
how
for it.
I was like, I thought I would be rich, but no. But not how it is for most writers. But at least I get something.
Yes, very, very cool. And let's chat about that. You stated that it was a science fiction writer that you were reading. And that is one of the areas I wanted to go ahead and touch base on. I'm very, very excited about the fact that I have found this field. I was always into the paranormal and whatnot, that type of field. But most recently, I found myself over the last three to five years enjoying more dystopian science fiction, steampunk, really going more into depth and more that in that those genres that before I had never even looked at. What draws you to the science fiction fantasy genre?
It was the idea that there were so many exciting possibilities that I could write about, that you could think about what had happened and change it, or think about what might happen. And me, as a Black woman, these things are precious. This is what
yes.
This is the direction I need to go. I need to create a new future and repurpose
yes.
the past.
I love that. And I will touch base on that a little bit. I've spoken with different authors over the last few years, and there I have spoken with many authors that were very strong. There was a very strong consensus that many of the African Americans were tending to write more in the contemporary romance, the romance area, and. I had not at that time, seen many in the more science fiction arena. And I do believe it is beginning to blossom and it's growing, and I'm so excited about that. Do you foresee more growth in that area
absolutely.
For African Americans? I do. I think that's exciting. Yes, I am so excited about that.
It's a wonderful time to be alive because we joke sometimes that there are more than one. It's like that Highlander
right.
show. There can be only one. There actually are many, many Black science fiction writers. But I used to go to science fiction conventions, and I would make
okay.
a point of going up to every Black person that I met, every person of color, of anybody, and going up and shaking their hands and introducing myself. I can't do that at some of these anymore. There's like 100 people there. I'm so happy.
Awesome. I think that is great. And the reason I even brought that particular subject up is because, I actually have spoken with authors that, saw more of the alternative view, stating that, just in their personal preferences, they weren't as drawn to the science fiction due to the fact they did not, they could not identify with it. And so, I think there was a consensus to stick with pretty much what has been written. That is a very strong, romance, in the romance in the contemporary area. I think it was a draw to stay there. And so it's exciting to talk with more African Americans and people of color, and not just African Americans, but people of color, everyone that is beginning to open up this field. And I think that is great. And I actually have spoken with publishers that are actively looking for more people of color. And again, we're not just specifying African Americans, people. It's just more diversity, I would just say, in the science fiction. So this is an actual active. They're actively looking. When I spoke with that particular publisher, they're actively looking for this, and I think that is great. So I'm just so excited. Let's chat about Everfair, guys. I pre-ordered my copy, and I really encourage you to go out and grab yours too. And so where did the idea for Airfare originate? And can you tell us a little bit about it? I understand you can't do spoilers, but what is it about?
All right. Well, I'll start with that, and then I'll tell you where the idea came from. Everfair is the name of a utopian colony started by some African-American missionaries and some British socialists, the Fabian Society they were called. It's set in late 1800s, so it's post-Civil War, and these two groups get together and buy some land from King Leopold II of Belgium. King Leopold, you may not have heard of him, he was responsible for the death of millions of Africans, Central Africans. Millions.
Okay.
He personally owned this land and decided that he needed to extract all the rubber from there, all the natural rubber. This was before there was any artificial process for making rubber. So he needed to extract all he could get out of there so that he would be wealthy. And his methods were extremely brutal, as in he would have his underlings give someone a basket and say, well, here's your choice. You can fill that basket with pieces of raw rubber, or you can sit there and I will fill it with your hands and the hands of all your people. I will chop them off. I will put them in that basket. So, it was horrible. And then there was the disease. As I say, millions of people died. So it was the origin of the phrase humanitarian crime. People who campaigned against this included a Civil War veteran black man named George Washington Williams, Mark Twain. There were a bunch of people who campaigned to depose Leopold from this private fiefdom that he had. So anyway, that's the background. So I was invited to be on a panel at the World Fantasy Convention because a book of mine had been nominated for an award they distribute there. Didn't win, but I was there, and I was drafted onto this panel about steampunk, which caused me to wonder, why don't I like steampunk? I should love it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very fond of Victorian literature.
Yes.
I have this sort of fondness, affection for heavy equipment. I find it somewhat titillating. I'll just share that with you and the listener. And so the gears, the boilers, all that, I like it. So why didn't I like steampunk? And the answer I came up with was that it was too close to and supportive of colonial values.
Oh, okay.
So, all the people who were spreading their empires in that period, those were the ones that steampunk was valorizing, making heroes out of. So in the midst of this room of hundreds of people, I declared that I would write a steampunk novel set in this horrible backdrop of the Belgian Congo. And then one of the panelists, Michael Swanwick, shuddered and looked at me and rolled his eyes. And I said, and I will make you beg to read this book.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
So,
I love it.
So I had to come up with a way to do that. And that's what I did. I created this fictional utopia.
I'm curious. You're a lover of history, so maybe it was just a run across through. But how did you learn of Leopold? How did you learn of this incident that you knew that you were going to build your story around?
Well, I had heard about him. The book that I read, that most people have read about him, one of those books that changes people's views of history. It's called King Leopold's Ghost. And it's just a fascinating book. I recommend it highly. It's by Adam, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, Hochschild or something like that. It's very detailed account, unfortunately, some rather gruesome photographs of King Leopold's reign of terror.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about some of the people who fought against him, and it was very moving.
Very, and I'm a history buff, and so that's what caught my attention, thinking, how did she come across that? That's very awesome, you know, that you're, you know, it's just a history that I didn't, you know, myself hadn't learned of, and so I'm very interested to find out a little bit more about it. So you made your first, you made your foray into writing the steampunk, the alternative histories. How, you know, and at the end, you know, the project is done, do you think that you will continue writing in this particular genre?
I'm not sure. I may write a sequel to this, actually, but since the book finishes in 1914, it
mm-hmm.
can't really be Victorian. There's
mm-hmm.
another subgenre called diesel punk, and I think it would
yes.
be
yes.
more along those lines.
Yes, 1920s to the 50s. Right. I think
yeah,
like the 1920s
yeah.
to the 50s is the diesel punk era. And then I know I'm really excited. Now, New York is not really, you know, a punk, but, you know, people tend to veer towards it. But I love all of that. So I think this is just so fascinating. I'm so excited. Now you've written other stories and prior to this. What about your work prior to this? Was it science fiction? Can you tell us about it?
Mostly it's science fiction and fantasy. I write some
okay.
nonfiction too. I have a nonfiction book that I co-authored called Writing the Other, which is about
mm-hmm.
how to depict someone who's different from you racially
right.
or their ability or that kind of thing. But mostly it's been short stories. I've written some other novels too. I just haven't managed to sell them to a publisher yet. This was actually the fourth novel that I finished, the fourth.
This is the fourth. Oh my goodness. And you have, and it will be released, it's slated for release through Tor, correct? And they're awesome, you know. I love many of their books, so I think this is great.
They're one of the best publishers for science fiction these days.
They really are. They've been around since early 1970s. They're like the grandfather, so this is just incredible. It's an awesome thing. And I did, audience, my lovely listeners, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. When I was saying earlier regarding, you know, the contemporary romance, there is nothing, you know, wrong with contemporary. I think that it's wonderful. I was just meaning I'm excited about expansion and, you know, just going into different areas, regardless of, you know, the race or whatnot. But I was just, you know, wanted to make sure I was a little clearer on that. Now, Everfair. Now, you wrote the book. You had your masterpiece. What did you do then? How did you start shopping it around? I mean, tell us the process. How was it nabbed by Tor? That is awesome. Congrats.
Well, you know, fiction, it's a very non-hierarchical business. So, first of all, I had met personally the editor that bought it and had been
mm-hmm.
on panels with him and had dinner with him and all that kind of stuff well before Everfair came up. Second of all, though, I didn't sell him a finished book. I sold him four chapters and an outline.
Wow.
And then I had to finish the book.
Well, no pressure there, huh?
He knew that I was capable of finishing books, and
was there much research involved? I mean, I would assume so. I mean, I knew you knew the history, but what other type of research did you need to do for your story? How long did the whole process of writing the book take for you?
It took about 5 to 6 years to write the book. Yeah. I did a lot of research. I don't know that I did enough. I did research online, and then I would find clues online to things that I needed to delve into more deeply. One of my most favorite resources of all is a book called African Reflections, which it's basically the catalog of an exhibit. And this exhibit is a bunch of artistic objects and photographs from someone's expedition to a bunch of German expeditions to the area that Everfair represents. So the photos are taken around 1910, 1914. So it's pretty contemporaneous with what I was trying to depict. That was a fabulous resource.
Awesome. And go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, and maps. I used a lot of maps and watched how they changed, watched their boundaries expand and contract, watched towns disappear due to war and that sort of thing. Tons of books, tons of maps, tons of online research, and probably not enough. I would have liked to have gone there.
Oh, I know. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, but it was not
easy. Oh, and so what was your writing process? Did you just write? Did you have a certain time daily that you wrote, or was it just whenever you could fit it in, your writing process?
Oh, I've been told I have a highly developed writing process, which could also be a very diplomatic way of saying, wow, why did you complicate this so much? But there are certain times of day that I prefer to write. I prefer to write in the afternoon and evening and use the morning for sort of survival things, you know, doctor's visits and that kind of stuff. And then when I've got that out of the way, I can just write as long as I want. I prefer to write more than one day in a row so that I can get submersed in the world that I'm trying to depict. I like to have certain kinds of music, food, incense, all kinds of sensory input that cue me into the world that I'm trying to depict. It's pretty developed.
If you can be, well, I know you said that you wanted to visit, so that may be the answer, but it can be a world that you're depicting your book or any of your favorite authors. What world would you like to live in, you know, if you can choose any out of a book, and why?
Oh, really? Oh my gosh. Oh, you know, there are many worlds that it's really cool to read about that I would never want to live in.
That's true.
You know, they're interesting, they're fun, and oh, please, I hope I never experience what those people are going through.
That's true.
In fact, I would say that that's pretty much the mark of a good story, is that you want to get the hell out of it. You want to be with the people, but you don't want to be in the circumstances that they are in. So I don't know that I would want to live in Everfair, for instance. There's a lot of drama going on there.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever read any Nora Jemison. N.K. Jemison is the name that she writes under. You know, I guess I wouldn't want to live in those worlds either. But she does have some wonderful. She does have some wonderful romance going on. I could use that. Maybe Sophia Samatar's Alandria, as long as I could be a rich person there. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Who is some of your who are some of your favorite authors that influenced you, you know, in your work?
Well, Samuel R. Delaney, whom I whenever I teach, I mention him about 8 times per class. Stylistically and in so many ways, he's influenced me. I've tried to emulate him. I don't know if I've made it, but I have. Also, outside the genre, Colette, whom I use in several stories as well. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Her grandfather was a mulatto. So,
okay.
And also, I would say I've been influenced by Raymond Chandler outside of it, the science fiction genre. It's because his techniques as far as describing settings have really helped me.
Very nice. Would you, if you were not writing in science fiction and fantasy, what would be another genre that would interest you, you think?
Children's books.
Really?
And I mean, I may still be able to get a couple of those. I have a middle years book, and I have a picture book. I'd like to get those published as well, because that's, then you're just reaching into people's minds at their most formative stage, right?
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And when I was a child, I loved reading, so, yeah.
I know two of my, inside the genres, my favorite writers is Octavia Butler. I love her. And Tenerife Dew and My Soul to Keep series, I think that is, you know, I love those two right there. But I agree with you. I love, like, the children books and the young teen, you know, novels. I tend to read more of that if I'm reading, you know, anything else. So, very, very cool.
Yeah.
Now, what would you say, what do you do for fun? I mean, when you're not writing, you're taking a break, what do you do to let your hair down?
Precious little, I can tell you that. I sing. I enjoy music very much. I sing and I dance. I started my own band, but it's a lot easier to be an author and take care of just yourself than to deal with the egos of an entire band. So that's gone.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, you're very creative. So, it seems to be all your life that that aspect was there. Well, how about the people in your daily life, your family, your friends? How do they feel about your book and your writing career? And now that you're just really making headway and just moving forward. I mean, what has been the feedback?
My mother loves it. She just loves it. Everybody listen to my mom. She says it's great. She's read it and she's been like just captivated. She's read other works of mine, but she's much more impressed with Everett Fair than anything else I've ever written.
Mm-hmm.
My friends are all writers. So
they're writers.
They
okay.
Yeah. They're like, oh yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. So it's in the family. That's great. I think that's perfect.
Yeah.
Wow, that is fantastic. So now that the book is releasing September 6th, guys. So you can already pre-order some. I'm telling you to go out there and get it, guys. How about the other part? I speak with many authors. And we've all felt the same. We thought the hard part was just writing the book, but of course, no one spoke about the marketing, the getting the word out. What are some of the avenues that you're going to utilize or you are utilizing to get the word out about Everfair?
Well, Well, you know, social media, I have a few thousand followers that way, and I have friends that have followers. I'm going on an 8-city book tour. I'll be in Austin. I don't know where you are in Texas, but September 9th, I'll be in Austin.
How cool. So, I'm in Fort Worth, so yeah, that's about, I don't know, how long, not too far. I could drive. I would love to see you live. Guys, yes,
yeah.
I'm fangirling. I'm sorry. They'll just do everyone. I'm just fangirling.
Fine. So you know, going out and touring around, doing interviews like we're doing here, and writing blog posts, that kind of thing.
So you've worked towards it, and you know, ever since you were a little girl, you were dreaming about it. How is the reality of being, you know, the published author, the successful author, with how you dreamed about it? What are some of the things that you learned, and what are some of the things that you would do differently, you know, from your experience and your journey so far?
I probably wouldn't have worked at such interesting jobs if I'd had my wits around me. Because if you put your creativity into your work, then there's less of it for your writing. Octavia Butler worked very menial, boring jobs, and she started with writing a lot earlier in her life than I did, and I think that is something that I would probably change. Probably the only thing I'd change.
And so you would change your day job. You're a teacher, correct? Are you in education?
I don't have much of a day job these days. I'll do some online classes every couple of months, and I work one day a week in a bookstore, so I am actually able to make a living of some sort just from my writing.
Right. We love books, so we just love being surrounded by them all, you know, every bibliophile. We just, so that's the perfect atmosphere. But I do agree. I think that is a great advice, you know, to be able to channel your creativity into the vision that you're creating. If you were to meet a new writer, what would be a piece of advice you would give them?
Well, the most useful thing to do is to write, and the second most useful thing to do is read. Those are the things that you've got to do. The third most useful thing is to show people what you've written and take just their advice, listen to what they have to say about what you've written, what it means to them, what it does to them, all that.
Nice. And I know we are running down a little bit on time, but what has been one of the most rewarding experiences, moments, out of this entire journey so far for you as far as being published? You know, what was one of the most memorable moments for you?
One of the most memorable moments actually came well before I published or even dreamed of publishing Everfair. I went to the Clarion West Writers Workshop in 1992. One of my instructors was John Crowley, who's another writer. I wouldn't say he was an influence, but he's certainly one that I've looked up to all my adult life. He took up some story that I'd written, and he stood in front of the class and he read aloud a line from it, and he said, "I wish I'd written that."
Wow.
Yeah, for me that was like a peak experience. To have someone that I idolized basically say with envy, "I wish I'd written that." And that story was actually my second professional sale. I sold it to Asimov. He wasn't the only one that thought it was good, but it made a big difference to me that it was him.
That's incredible. So, you know, is there anything in the works right now that you're working on?
Oh, yeah. Well, just today I was working on a book review of Hidden Figures, that story of the NASA engineers and mathematicians, the African-American women that did all that work. So I'm just reviewing that. I just finished revisions on a story I called Sunshine of Your Love, which is a series, the second in a series of stories about a young boy at the time of the MOVE riots in Philadelphia, who is shot and then discovers that he's immortal. So I'm just sort of following through his immortal lifetime. So yeah, he's sort of like a superhero that I'm writing about. So
that's
Sunshine of Your Love is the second one. The first one, Lazarus, is coming out in an anthology called Upside Down in November.
Mm-hmm. Fun stuff. You've got so many things happening. Very, very excited. Well, Niecy, thank you so much for joining me this evening. I've just had a ball just chatting with you, and I am really, guys, I don't know if you can tell, I'm looking forward to September 6th and reading Everfair, and of course I will, you know, share my thoughts, but I am just so excited about this book. I really am. I'm a history buff, and I'm excited about the world that you've created to learn more. So perfect. It has everything that, you know, the history, it has the science that I love, it has everything in it. And so I cannot wait. So it has been an honor to chat with you. It really has. And so thank you for joining me. Now, how can everyone that is listening, if they want to touch base with you, buy copies of your books, where can they go?
My website, because you can't, there's an email address there and everything. My website is niecyshawl.com, NISISHAWL. That's got my, all is one word, that's got my tour dates. It's got a little bit of extra content outside of Everfair. Some of the things with spoilers, so you maybe don't want to look until you've read the book.
I'm not going to look at it yet. No.
Okay. I will talk about the book. There are 11 point of view characters.
Okay. Yes.
So,
in the book, in Everfair?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
11 point of view characters.
Wow.
So,
very, very cool.
So we're supposed to be following one person chapter after chapter. Sorry, it's not that kind of book.
That's incredible. See, that is another aspect we could chat about. And I do hope that, you know, later on that you will come back and chat with us. I'm sure my co-host will be with us at that time. And so you're, you know, welcome to come back anytime. And I'm so looking forward to, you know, diving into and digging into Everfair. And thank you so much for joining me this evening. Wish you all the best with your upcoming release. And we just hope that I hope that you have a wonderful weekend. Thank you so much, Niecy, for joining me. And everyone that is listening. Anytime. You're welcome back.
Thank you.
And everyone that is out there listening, thank you so much for just taking time to join in and you know, listen to the conversation. We just hope that you'll go out, show some love, follow Niecy Shawl, support Everfair. It is releasing from tour on September 6th, so make sure you go out there, grab your copy, or grab your copy now. It is on Amazon. You can get it, you know, pre-order it. So go out there and do that. Hint, hint. Cough, cough. Anyway, all right, guys, there you have it. And we just hope that you have a wonderful weekend. And why? I always said, because you deserve it. Have a good one, guys. Bye-bye. Have a good night, Niecy. Have a one. You know, again, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.